Kempire is brought to you by...
The Kempire After Dark, the villain era, is finally here. Tickets have now gone on sale for Atlanta, Philadelphia, and New York City. Stay tuned for more announcements. But if you've been looking for an opportunity to meet me in person or hear me spill tea in person, this is your opportunity. We're coming back to City Winery in Philadelphia on July 10th, then Atlanta on August 5th, and then back here in New York City on September 12th. More information on tickets will be available in the description. And don't forget, the New York City show has an exclusive option for live stream. So get your tickets today.
You're listening to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network.
Describe today and the cross with the defense and Dawn as being ping pong. How so?
Yeah, so I think that it was such a rapid fire of questions from the defense when she was asking Dawn Richard about some of those inconsistencies that you could literally see the jurors looking back and forth at the defense and then at Dawn Richard. So that was the first time that I had seen that, as there was so much quick back and forth when the defense was making her arguments to Dawn Richard and questions, really, about some of those inconsistencies. So at the beginning, before the jurors came in, the judge talked about being careful not to make this sort of a gossip case, if you will, or a case built on gossip, were his words. So what we're seeing is the judge actually acknowledging that there's concerns from the defense about some of the statements that are being able to be read in court, or some of the evidence that's being able to be submitted. So there's this acknowledgement that, you know, focus on the racketeering, focus on the elements of the crime, not so much on things that are hearsay or gossip-like.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
It's day 6 of the Sean Diddy Combs trial, and Dawn Richard has taken the stand, and even Cassie Ventura's former best friend, Carrie Morgan, who Cassie mentioned multiple times in her testimony, also has taken the stand. Let's unpack the day's events together in day 6 of the Diddy trial. And if you missed it last week, we broke down day 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 of the Diddy trial for you. So if you want a place where you're getting a summary of the day's events, be sure to subscribe and turn on your notifications so you don't miss out. I am definitely locked in to giving you at least a summary. And included in my summary are context of different stories that I've covered, lawsuits that I've covered related to Diddy, or some of the different transcripts and notes that I'm seeing throughout the trial day. So stay tuned for that. And I will be highlighting certain reporters that are in the room for these testimony. So let's talk about Dawn Richard. Did you know Dawn Richard, formerly of Danity Kane and formerly of Diddy Dirty Money, testified briefly at the end of the day on Friday, but I already knew that she would be back on the stand today because the defense had to question her as well. According to people that were on the inside, including reporters for Law and Crime here on YouTube, they said Dawn's questioning, cross-examination got intense. But according to the reporter that was inside, she says that she felt like she held her own, but it did have its tense moments. And at the end of the day, Diddy's attorneys have to try and discredit Dawn. So let's just go through the day. And again, as always, I'm going to cite my source in regards to who we are relying on today for our summary. Our friends over at NBC News has got us covered, because I've compared some of the other summaries that I've seen. And I'm like, don't really love this one. Don't like how it's not necessarily in order. But our friends over at NBC News are helping us out. So they started the day off with just reminding us that Cassie's graphic testimony may set the stage for what's to come. They said in the first week of testimony in Combs' federal S trafficking trial in New York, Cassie Ventura, whose real name is Cassandra Ventura, described over 4 days and being 8.5 months pregnant, that on the witness stand, a tumultuous relationship with a music impresario that began in her early 20s and lasted on and off for over a decade. As the government's star witness, her responses gave a window into a world centered around paid sexual encounters lasting days. According to her, the longest they ever did one of those freak-offs were 4 days. And sometimes occurring weekly, known as freak-offs, and that she said she was forced to endure under the threat of physical and psychological abuse. The freak-offs were so regular, she said that they became a job. She felt like she was an S worker. Much of what Ventura, 38, testified to was graphic, from the sex acts with male S workers to the violence, including the fights with Combs, that left her covered in bruises, she said. If she attempted to refuse a freak-off, a visibly pregnant Ventura also recounted how she said that Combs R'd her, raped her, in her living room back in 2018, which he has denied. We told you a little bit about that. She claims that they had a sort of closure conversation. And if you've ever been in a relationship, you probably have had a similar conversation. And apparently he went back to her Malibu apartment and she claims that he raped her. She also admitted that after that happened, she did have consensual sex with him. I'm giving you the full picture. Because Cassie Ventura is the star witness and a lot of legal minds believe it was her lawsuit, which we found out in this case, got her $20 million. We also found out in her testimony that she's also going to probably get an 8-digit payout from the Intercontinental Hotel where that 2016 incident happened. What we found out from a lot of legal minds is that they're pretty sure that it was her lawsuit and what she said in that lawsuit that had a trigger warning. What she said in that lawsuit is what triggered this federal investigation and now this trial. So they continue. They say that Combs spent most of his career as an influential figure in hip hop. Now he's on trial over human trafficking allegations. NBC News, Gaddy Schwartz talks to Variety senior music writer Stephen J. Horowitz about how this trial might affect the genre.
That there is the Sean Combs, the artist, the fashion designer, the actor, the businessman, and he has launched careers. He's won Grammys. He's been seen as one of the biggest players in making hip hop mainstream. But how is all of this going to affect the hip hop industry and the culture going forward? Joining us now is Variety's senior music writer Stephen J. Horowitz. Once again, Stephen, great to see you. Like we were just talking about it. We've seen changes. We saw Harvey Weinstein's downfall, exposing sexual exploitation in women in the film industry. Like, do you think that we're about to see this possibly in hip hop as well?
And look, no offense to this journalist that he's speaking to, but I'm looking at him and Mr. Horowitz is a white man, and I'm sure he probably covers hip hop and things like that. But I feel like a question like this, NBC News, should be directed at some of the pioneers, some of the people that are actually in hip hop, that are part of the industry. And I point that out because I feel like it's necessary for those that are watching this or listening to this. And they're like, OK, so who is this Horowitz guy in regard? And why should we listen to him and his perspective? Not saying that he's wrong, but I'm just saying if you're going to ask someone about hip hop, there's plenty of pioneers in hip hop that would give you. And maybe NBC News has spoken to them, but this is a clip that they've included.
I think we are seeing it in some ways already. We've seen powerful men in hip hop be held accountable for the alleged ways they've treated women over the years. Whether or not those claims are substantiated, there have been recent lawsuits filed for sexual misconduct against Def Jam executives Russell Simmons and Kevin Lyles. We've seen it happen with L.A. Reid, another powerful executive. Just last month, Soulja Boy was ordered to pay $4 million to a Jane Doe in a sexual assault case. Lizzo had this with her backup dancers. There's many examples here. I think cases like the Diddy one creates a space for women who have suffered from sexual abuse to come forward. I think that's given women the courage to speak out and hold those accountable for their actions. And I think in that sense, a lot of the ripple effect from this could be about empowerment and creating a safer space for women in the music business.
It also makes me wonder, will this, I mean, right now, yes, we've seen lawsuits come here and there in regards to other people in the hip hop industry. It makes me wonder, are we going to see some more people As you know, Jay-Z was brought into the situation. He fought it, and that particular lawsuit was dismissed. It makes me wonder if there are going to be other individuals. One thing I will note, just because I don't want to forget it later, Harv Pierre, who was named in one of the civil lawsuits with Diddy, who was also a former president of the Bad Boy Entertainment, Dawn mentions his name, along with security guards, D-Rock and Bonds and things like that, during her testimony.
What kind of mark do you think this is going to have overall on the culture?
This is why I find it so interesting. You're asking this senior writer at Variety, this white man, got to say what it is, how this is going to affect the hip-hop culture. NBC, really?
I hope that the mark it leaves on a hip-hop culture would be that it holds people in powerful positions responsible to learn how to wield their power correctly and act with professionalism. I also hope that it creates more opportunity for women in the hip-hop workspace. You have to keep in mind that hip-hop only turned 50 in 2023, so that's a relatively short history in the grand scope of recorded music, and it really reached the peak of its powers in the early aughts, so there's a lot of room for growth. Mm-hmm. And I hope that the mark this case leaves will help create a positive change moving forward.
And Stephen, one last thing, like, you know, what the therapist was just saying about where the culture was in the 2000s, just like the lyrics, right? The lyrics, do you think we're going to see like a big difference in lyrics going forward?
I'm not sure we can say that. I mean, music is about expression, right? Hip hop is about expression. It's about giving a voice to the voiceless. So I'm not sure that it's going to change the actual content of what people are saying. There's been a lot of legal back and forth and cases brought to court where people talk about, you know, rap lyrics and hold rappers accountable for what they've said. It really doesn't stick in these cases. So I'm not sure we're going to see any change in the content of what people are saying. But who knows?
Who knows? I definitely think we will see a change in the content. I think we already have started to see a change as the Me Too movement has happened. I definitely have already seen the change. Certain things, people are highlighting lyrics from years ago. Like, why did we think that was okay for these rappers to say, both female and male rappers? Because I remember them saying some of the things that MC Lyte said in some of her older songs. As Dr. Maya Angelou once said, when you know better, you do better. So hopefully, now that we know better, people will do better and that this behavior is not acceptable in hip hop. I hope, because this trial is about 2 months, a little bit less than 2 months, that media outlets will reach out to people that are in the hip hop community when asking questions about how this might possibly change the culture. And I get it. Mr. Horowitz is a Variety article, Variety journalist, but if you're going to ask about the culture and the impact a situation like this will have on the culture, let's ask them. However, maybe they did. And because Diddy is so ingrained in hip hop and so influential in hip hop, a lot of people may have turned him down. There have been a lot of people that have been silent when it comes to this Diddy trial and these Diddy accusations. All right. So this is what NBC reminds us, says Dawn Richard, a former member of the Danity Kane, an all-girl group that Diddy created on MTV's Making the Band, took the stand on Friday and testified that she saw that Combs physically assaulted Ventura in his home in Los Angeles in 2009. Richard alleged that he threw Ventura to the ground, threw a skillet full of eggs at her, put his arm around her neck, and dragged her upstairs. Richard testified that I was scared for her. I was scared to do anything. Richard, as you know, took the stand also today. Also, for those that may have missed the separate video that I did, our weekend update, I think it was like a TikTok that I did, but I also posted it here on YouTube, but I'll mention it here. Aubrey O'Day confirmed via the TJ Holmes and Amy Robach podcast. Yes, they have a podcast. That she will not be testifying. She did speak to Homeland Security, but she will not be testifying. Apparently, she is working on telling her side of her experiences with Diddy in some other realm. I'm guessing maybe some sort of documentary or whatever it may be. Can I just say this about Aubrey? On some level, I feel like Aubrey, so many people are waiting to hear Aubrey because Aubrey has always taken shots at Diddy, no matter when it was cool or not cool. She would take those shots. I just feel like in this particular situation, I feel as if Aubrey is a bit of a clout chaser when it comes to this. Because she had all this talk, and I felt like she was trolling the world, the public, with her posts on social media, making it seem as if she was going to testify, only for her to be like, oh, I'm not testifying. And whatever she's doing, she's going to get paid to speak her truth. Fine. That's all well and good. She hasn't even filed a personal lawsuit against Diddy. But I just feel as if she's done like the TMZ documentary and things like that. And I'm not saying that she doesn't have a legitimate story. I've told you, Dee Woods in the Max documentary talked about a legitimate story that Aubrey had told her about her experience with Diddy during those early years. So I just found it interesting. I was like, okay, so Aubrey, were you just trolling the public with your being in New York and blah, 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 blah? And I'm just like, all right. I just feel like this is not a laughing matter. This is not something to be trolling anyone, because you start to take credibility away from people that are testifying, that have real stories. And I'm not saying she doesn't have one, but playing these sort of like reindeer games, I don't like that. NBC says that former Danity Kane member Darmstadt arrived at court shortly after 8 a.m. Combs' attorney, including Xavier Donaldson, Alexandra Shapiro, and Mark Agnifilo, were also seen arriving this morning. Court officially was in session, kicking off of day six of Combs' trial. They said after about 20 minutes of discussion between the judge and attorneys from both sides, Rashard was brought back to the witness stand to continue her testimony. Rashard wore slacks with a white shirt and overcoat. And it's important to note what they're wearing, the mood in the court, because there are no audio, there is no video of this. And this is part of the reason why. And I'm glad, because if you saw any of the paparazzi footage outside or the media footage outside on Friday, there were a lot of people chasing Dawn Rashard down, saying all kinds of things. One particular woman, I don't believe she was a person of the media. I think she was pretending to be a person of the media. It's like a circus show out there. At one particular point, this woman asked Dawn Rashard how big Diddy's private area is. It's a bit of a media circus outside. I also reported to you guys, I think in our weekend update, that there are people out there wearing free Diddy shirts. Well, hold on before you get upset. Apparently, they're being paid $20 an hour to do that. And some of those people looked unhoused, some of them. And this goes back to what we've been saying, that Diddy, even behind bars, he still has influence outside. Rashard recalled how frightened she was when Combs allegedly threatened her and the defendant's then girlfriend, Cassie Ventura. The incident happened in 2009, a day after Combs attacked Ventura with a skillet, according to Rashard. She's talking about when, because remember, they were creating and producing and writing and recording Diddy Dirty Money at this time. Kalena Harper, who, as you also know, Diddy ended up contacting multiple times after Dawn Rashard filed her own lawsuit and talked about her experiences in those lawsuits. And Diddy allegedly was reaching out to Kalena multiple times, so much so that it's mentioned in the prosecution has mentioned this. And apparently he may have or allegedly paid Kalena to post the Instagram post that she posted. And then she did that weird interview. We've talked about that. Again, check our YouTube channel out. I am also doing a separate trial playlist covering all of these summaries. The incident happened in 2009, according to Dawn Rashard. She says in a quote, "He said, 'You could go missing, that we could die,' Rashard told jurors. 'I was shocked, but also scared. I couldn't believe this would be the beginning of a journey for us with the group Dirty Money.'" So this was at the very beginning that she witnessed this stuff happening. Dawn Rashard said that she regularly witnessed Combs lashing out at Cassie Ventura over the years, often after his then girlfriend would voice her opinion. "Frequently, he would punch her, choke her, slap her in the mouth, kick her, punch her in the stomach," Rashard told jurors. "It could be because Cassie was speaking up for herself. It could be random. It could be she had an opinion for herself," Rashard said. "She would be quiet when she had these moments of trying to stick up for herself. He would hurt her for it. The two female members of Diddy Dirty Money wore sunglasses alongside Cassie Ventura during a Central Park appearance as a way to support her, Rashard testified. According to Rashard, Ventura was punched in the face by Diddy at his home in 2009, ahead of the event. Diddy's former girlfriend had a swollen eye that Ventura used makeup and sunglasses to hide, Rashard told the court. "We wore sunglasses to have solidarity with her and have a support system because she needed it." Rashard is likely best known for her time performing with the girl group Danity Kane, but she was also in another musical group in the mid-2000s. She got her start with Combs through his reality show, making making the band Three, which is how Danny DeCane formed. The group had two relatively popular albums between 2006 and 2008, but disbanded in January of 2009. Combs then briefly formed a trio with himself, Richard, and Kalena Harper the same year it was announced Danny DeCane broke up. That lasted until roughly 2012, and Richard released a solo album called Golden Heart the next year. Combs would angrily tell his then-girlfriend, Cassie Ventura, to, quote, wait her turn for recording an album, Richard said. When Richard would support Ventura's musical aspirations, Combs didn't like me talking with her about that, the witness said. He said it would be on his terms. It was always a wait, wait, wait. Remember, she signed a 10-album deal with him when she first came out with her first single, Me and You. She had to wait for her turn. Sometimes it was just wait your turn. Other times it was violent or volatile. The witness said numerous employees of Combs and his Bad Boy Records witnessed his violence against Ventura and no one stepped in, including herself, she said. So she named D-Rock, Bond, Harf Pierre, who was also named in a recent lawsuit where he's being accused of SA, along with Sean Diddy Combs. Richard's testimony could help bolster the prosecution's narrative that Combs committed racketeering conspiracy by using his multifaceted business empire to coerce and control women for sex. So that is important detail here, because a lot of people in defense of Diddy are saying, or not even just defense of Diddy, are just saying, but are they proving their case, the prosecution, of racketeering, of S trafficking, of the transportation of S workers across state lines. So those are important elements that people are paying attention to. Is the prosecution doing that? So far, what they've shown is the fact that, yes, they had a very abusive relationship, Cassie and Diddy. However, are they proving what he's being charged for? Yes, should he be charged for DV? Yes. However, it's important to know, we're talking about Dawn Richard. She wasn't a personal friend to Diddy. She was an employee. In continuation, let me just double check something, because there were a few moments that I wanted to highlight from Dawn's testimony, because I did pay attention during, and shout out to Inner City Press as well, in regards to their coverage of the case. And I keep telling you guys, it's not a transcript. It's him quickly trying to jot down some of the Q&A that's happening on the witness stand and the testimony that we're seeing. So our friends over at the Shade Room are also doing a trial watch, and they said week two of the U.S. versus Sean Combs trial begins with Dawn Richard resuming her witness testimony. In their recalling of what Dawn said, they said Dawn Richard ended her testimony on Friday saying that she was told by Diddy that people could go missing after she allegedly witnessed him attack Cassie with a skillet. Today's testimony began right there. When asked how she interpreted the statement, she said that people could die. Dawn was also asked what she observed between Cassie and Diddy. She said that he would drag her and kick her and punch her in the mouth. She said that these acts of violence were often prompted by Cassie speaking up for herself. Prosecutors returned to questioning about Combs' drug use, or rather his offer of drugs to other people, while Richard was on the stand. Richard testified that Combs would have a drug dealer named One Stop deliver a range of substances to the recording studio, including cocaine and marijuana. She also told the court that Combs or his assistants would carry a Louis Vuitton pouch filled with drugs. Again, this is to emphasize that he created an enterprise to facilitate these dirty deeds. Cassie Ventura referred to the Louis Vuitton pouch as Combs' med bag during her testimony last week. Prosecutors then asked if Richard ever saw a weapon while with Combs. Richard said that she saw firearms a few times and that Combs' bodyguards had them and held them in their lower back. In continuing, Richard ended her direct examination by saying that she's seeking justice. In hopes of inoculating Richard against defense claims that she'd been biased against Combs due to her federal lawsuit against the music mogul, Assistant U.S. Attorney Mitzi Steiner asked the witness what she hopes to gain from testifying. Steiner asked Richard if she's expecting any compensation for your testimony. She says, I'm expecting justice. Then, of course, the cross-examination begins of Dawn Richard. And this is where it gets a little heated. And of course, this is their defense team's, this is their job. They have to take away from her credibility. So Combs' attorney, Nicole Westmoreland, began cross-examination of Rashard and picked up where prosecutors left off. Rashard's lawsuit against Combs. Westmoreland asked if Rashard was aware there was a pending motion to dismiss her lawsuit, which we saw, I don't know if you guys have seen this, I shouldn't assume, over the weekend is when Diddy's team sought to dismiss her lawsuit. A standard practice with civil lawsuits, but Rashard says she didn't know. Defense then began a line of questioning in an attempt to undermine Rashard's testimony last week that she witnessed Combs throw a skillet at Cassie. Westmoreland asked Rashard allegations have been, quote, changed over time, claiming that her allegations have changed. So they're saying in interviews that she's done with the prosecutors, it's not aligning with what she's saying on the stand. Westmoreland said that in a letter to Combs, Rashard alleged that she heard a pan hit the wall, but didn't see it. Rashard responded to the series of questions that she wasn't aware or didn't recall what Westmoreland was referencing. So a previous version of this live blog, they're correcting, misstated Rashard's testimony Friday. She testified that Combs tried to strike Ventura with a skillet, not that he struck Ventura with the skillet. Yeah, so he aimed to do that, but he didn't strike her with it. Defense attorney Nicole Westmoreland to try to poke holes in Rashard's claim that Combs attacked Ventura with a skillet of eggs. Westmoreland suggested in her questions that Rashard had told different versions of the 2009 incident, which, again, almost 20 years ago, you're trying to remember things verbatim. That's going to be hard, including one that simply had Combs throwing eggs at Ventura. Rashard told jurors on Friday that she saw Combs try to hit Ventura with the skillet. Westmoreland reminded Rashard that she's under oath and then asked if she's changed her story over time. Dawn responded, "I said the best that I could recall." Which is understandable. We're not talking about last week. Again, half the stuff that's happened last week I could barely remember, at least not in detail. Combs' defense is attempting to catch inconsistencies in Rashard's direct testimony, this time with the allegation that Combs said to her that people go missing and that they could die after witnessing a fight between him and Cassie Ventura. Westmoreland pulled up interviews Rashard had with prosecutors in October and March, where she also recounted the same incident with a skillet. Westmoreland pointed out Rashard said in the interview that Combs said this was a love thing with no mention of people go missing in her interview. "That's not true. I don't recall not saying that," Rashard responded. "You didn't tell prosecutors that Sean Combs said people go missing," Westmoreland continued. "I didn't remember it," Rashard told the court, later stating that she remembers everything I'm telling you now. I mean, again, it's their job to discredit Dawn and what she said in the past versus what she's saying right now. The defense challenged Rashard's testimony about weapons and narcotics she allegedly saw in Combs's possession, inferring that her memories only recently came to light. Under direct examination, earlier on Monday, Rashard detailed the times that she saw Combs with guns and illegal drugs. Westmoreland asked Rashard why the witness didn't mention GUNs in 8 meetings with prosecutors, and she said it wasn't asked. Also, under direct examination on Monday, Rashard said that she saw Combs taking ketamine, cocaine, and Molly. Westmoreland asked Rashard if she changed her story after previously telling the government investigators she hadn't seen Combs with cocaine. Sidebar, when I was watching the transcript or just the summary of this online from Inner City Press, I said to myself, if you put a bunch of different things in front of me, and I get it, cocaine is a powdery substance, but there are other powdery substances that people snort and do things with, I probably wouldn't know. Like, I don't know what ketamine looks like. I don't know what a Molly thing looks like. But I guess if you're in the industry, you kind of know, but fine. I would give her grace on that, because like, how do you know what he's popping at any given moment? Westmoreland asked Rashard if she changed her story after previously telling the government investigators she hadn't seen Combs use cocaine. She says, "Yes, as time progresses, I get better at knowing what went on because it was quite a long time ago," she said. In continuing of the cross-examination, moved into her career with Combs, which included her work with Danny DeCane and Combs' trio, Diddy Dirty Money. The singer confirmed, and this is where people kind of give the side eye to Don because they feel as if you continue to work with him and wanted to continue to work with him. Some people even cite Diddy's last album, Love, which she's featured on. However, I remind you that her work on the Love Project were leftovers from years ago of them working with Diddy Dirty Money. The singer confirmed that though she said that she was scared of Combs, she asked to work with him again. Westmoreland brought up the hundreds of thousands of records that Rashard sold while with both groups. Rashard confirmed that she asked Combs to sign her as a solo artist in 2011, which would have been the end of her time with Diddy Dirty Money, and Combs denied her. She also said that she asked to work with Combs as recently as 2020 or 2021. You felt like Mr. Combs ruined your career not once, but twice? Question mark. She says, yes. Federal prosecutors Mitzi Steiner picked up questioning for Rashard following a tough cross-examination, where defense attorneys attempted to undermine Rashard's testimony by pointing out inconsistencies in her retelling of events. Steiner asked whether Rashard had thought about the incidents a lot over the decades since she witnessed them. No, it was a hard time, a bad time for me, she said. It did not all come back immediately. The environment was traumatizing, so I tried to erase those things from my memory. By speaking with the investigators, Rashard said that more memories come to her every day and that she tries to relay things as best and as accurate as I can. She confirmed that she did tell the government that she saw Combs hitting Cassie and that he had threatened to keep her quiet during several meetings. Sidebar, though, that part of her testimony, are we really going to argue the fact that she witnessed this? I get it. This is the state's, well, this is what the prosecutors are trying to corroborate Cassie's abuse. We saw her abuse on video, live and in living color. He also admitted to that abuse on camera after it was released. And there were witnesses to that abuse that saw it on camera as well. So am I shocked that maybe he had abused her in front of people? But again, it's important to discredit her that her story is not true because she is considered a witness that was an employee to Sean Diddy Combs. They have to confirm and build this case, not a DV case, but a case of racketeering, a case of S trafficking. By speaking with investigators, Rashard said that more memories come to her every day and that she tries to relate things as best as she can and as accurate as she can. She confirmed that she did tell the government that she saw Combs hitting Cassie and he threatened to keep her quiet during several meetings. Rashard testified that she had, quote, no doubt that Combs tried to strike Cassie or that Cassie went into a fetal position or that Combs dragged Cassie by the stairs by her hair. She also had no doubt that Combs threatened Rashard to keep quiet. Under another round of cross-examination, Rashard admitted that she tried to work with Combs again despite all the allegations that the music mogul engaged in violence and drug use. The defense lawyer, Westmoreland, ticked off the number of performances, writing sessions, travel, and career talks Rashard would have to engage in with Combs despite the bad acts she had allegedly seen. But here's the thing, too. There are a lot of people that have worked with Diddy that have been maybe in a bad experience. I don't want to say necessarily abused, had a bad experience with him and still worked with him because he still was a big name. He was still celebrated. And this was her career. She wanted to continue to elevate her career. She's thinking that this is normal. These are things that she said in her own lawsuit, that she basically fooled herself that this is normal. Not eating, working hard, recording all around the clock, doing all these things. She thought this was normal. So her seeing him abuse Cassie, in her head, this is why when we talk about workplace incidents like this, just because you're not the target of abuse in a workplace incident, again, this is considered somewhat of a workplace because she's at his LA home because they're working on a project together. Just because you are not the target of abuse in this particular incident, your employees are witnessing you be abusive. That affects them. It could also manipulate them. It's almost like a veiled threat to you. You see what I'm doing to her, I could do to you and get away with it. I'm just giving you the perspective here. But I'm also letting you know, is this enough for the prosecution to prove their case? We shall see. I'm Westmoreland. Diddy's attorney says, you spent a lot of time together, even though he made death threats. She responds and says, yes. When pressed about her lawsuit against Combs, Rashard said, "I want justice and to be made whole." In her lawsuit, she's also accusing him of not paying her. She says that she's owed millions of dollars. And when Westmoreland asked if she meant being paid money, Rashard answered, "Yes." And look, he has a history of accusations where people have said that he's owed them money. Kerry Morgan, as you may recall, Kerry Morgan's name came up in Cassie Ventura's testimony last week multiple times because Kerry Morgan was a friend, a best friend to Cassie, but they're no longer friends. Kerry Morgan, the woman Cassie Ventura described as her former best friend, was called to the witness stand by the government once Dawn Rashard's testimony was concluded. Ventura testified last week that she met Morgan when she was a teenager and the two remained close for about 17 years. Combs' former girlfriend testified that their friendship ended after Combs allegedly hit Morgan in the head with a wooden hanger. But Morgan was allegedly aware of the abuse Cassie endured from Combs and had been around the couple regularly in the early days of their relationship when Cassie still lived in New York City. One of the things that I wanted to talk about and highlight in the testimony, the Shade Room writes this. It said the next witness that's taken the stand, Cassie's longtime friend, Kerry Morgan. She testified that she no longer has a relationship with Cassie Ventura, despite them being best friends from 2001 to 2018. Morgan alleged that she stopped being friends with Cassie because her boyfriend assaulted me and later specified she was referring to Diddy. Because there is an incident that happens in Jamaica between Kerry, Cassie, and Diddy. And this is what, shout out to our friends over at Inner City Press. The AUSA says this, "And the next time, Kerry Morgan in Jamaica, I saw him drag her by her hair. I ran back to get my purse and phone so that we could leave." The prosecution says, "What did you see next?" Kerry says, "I thought she was knocked out. Then she got up and ran into a wooded area." "What happened next?" Kerry says, "There were two golf carts in the driveway. I got in one and Sean got in another. We went in different directions looking for Cassie." The prosecution says, "Did you find her?" Morgan says, "Yes. Then we hid in a ditch, whispering." "Did Mr. Combs ever assault you?" Kerry says, "Yes. He hit me with a wood coat hanger and choked me." AUSA says, "Where did the hanger hit you?" Behind my right ear." What did he express concern about? Who Cassie was cheating on him with?" Prosecution says, who did you speak to about it?" Kerry says, "Ryan, Sean's old assistant." "What did he do?" Kerry responds, "Nothing," shrugs. "I have not spoken with Cassie since." So this just confirms what Cassie originally reported when it comes to what happened between her and Kerry, which is sad to me that these two have never spoken. Even after she left Diddy, these two used to be best friends and they still have not spoken since this happened. But I can understand where Kerry was like, "I'm out of here. It's one thing that you're getting abused, but now I'm being abused and I'm in a dangerous situation." Kerry Morgan made it clear that she was only in court testifying because she was issued a subpoena by the government. That is a reminder to those of you, like, why is this person testifying? Well, if you're subpoenaed, you're required or you're going to be arrested. So she says she's only testifying because she was issued a subpoena. Probably also why we've never heard her tell this story. She says, "I do not want to testify," Morgan said when she asked why she was there. She says, "I moved on with my life." Morgan also confirmed that she and Cassie Ventura, who met on a modeling shoot as teenagers, no longer speak because Ventura's boyfriend assaulted her. Kerry Morgan told the court that she got to know Combs very well in roughly the 11 years that he was dating her former best friend. She described him as someone who sometimes was very nice and generous, but also as someone who had mood swings and could be very aggressive. Morgan testified that Combs would get mad at Cassie and Cassie lost her spark and confidence while with Combs. When asked whether Combs ever spoke down to Cassie, Morgan said that it could be often and it could be regarding her looks or her behavior. Morgan also told the court that Combs would sometimes call her up to 50 times in a row to look for Cassie. Morgan testified that she personally witnessed Combs assault Cassie two times, once in Jamaica and once in LA. Sidebar, for those that are wondering about the family being in court, from what I've heard today, the sons and their daughters were not in, Sean Diddy's kids were not in court today. You may have seen over the weekend, the twins were getting ready for their prom and their brothers were there as well. So that might be part of the reason why they were not in court today, which is fine, because I can't imagine your children listening to this abuse over and over again in court. So Kerry Morgan described multiple incidents of Combs allegedly flying off the handle and beating Cassie Ventura with seemingly no provocation. Morgan first detailed an incident when she and Ventura were vacationing in Jamaica and Combs arrived halfway through their trip. Cassie had gone to the bathroom, and after a few minutes, Sean said that she was taking too long and he left me, and then I heard her screaming, the witness testified. It was a guttural, terrifying. I heard her screaming, so I went to the long hallway. They were coming out of the master bedroom and he was dragging her by her hair. Combs then dragged Ventura outside and threw her to the ground, where she hit her head on a brick. Oh my gosh. She's lucky to be alive, Morgan said. Ventura and Morgan then fled the scene in a golf cart and hid in a ditch as Combs searched for them in another golf cart for hours, Morgan testified. In a second incident, Morgan told the court that she was with Combs and Ventura at a house the defendant was renting in L.A., Hollywood Hills. She saw Combs allegedly hit or kick Ventura. Morgan urged the music mogul's security guard, Ruben, to do something, and he refused. He told the court that she and Ventura left the house to hide at a neighbor's place and heard Combs driving by to look for them. Ultimately, however, Ventura returned to Combs' house, Morgan said. Again, cycles of abuse. Kerry Morgan testified that though she urged Cassie Ventura to speak to the police about Combs' abuse, she refused to do what it would mean for her career and her livelihood. Prosecutor Meredith Foster asked Morgan whether she had ever spoken with Cassie about if she should stay with Combs. Morgan told the court that she and her former best friend would speak about it often. I wanted her to do what she wanted to do, but I told her that she should leave him. And she should, and she said that she could not because of her job, her car, her apartment. It was apparent to Morgan that after Ventura spent time with people associated with Combs, she did not want to leave him. Earlier in her testimony, Morgan said that Cassie was frustrated that Combs was in charge of her career, but never said why he was preventing her from releasing new albums. So here's the thing, and I know some people say, well, see, Cassie was just in it for the money and the fame and blah, blah, blah. Well, other people have also said that he infiltrated her life. He made her very dependent on him. He also manipulated her to believe. And remember, she wanted this career. And there are a lot of people in this industry, again, when you look at the Dawn Richard and what she had to say in her testimony, there were things that people felt like they needed to do in order to have this career. Not saying that it's right. I'm just letting you know the mindset of what some of these people in the industry are willing to put up with in order to have a career. And when you get promises from the top man in this business, you're like, okay, then I'll do what I need to do in order to be successful, like he has become. Kerry Morgan recounted the alleged assault she personally endured from Combs that ended her almost 2-decade friendship with Cassie Ventura. She testified that she was at Ventura's house listening to music when Combs came into the singer's apartment. Cassie was in the bathroom, and Morgan said that she was in the living room at the time. He came up behind me and choked me and left finger marks on my neck and hit me in the head with a wooden hanger, Morgan told the court. Cassie was in the bathroom. It hit me behind my right ear. Morgan added that Combs was talking about Cassie cheating on him and she grabbed her personal things and left. She said that she went to an urgent care for a concussion, noting that she was dizzy and vomited a few times. I wonder if they could confirm those records. I don't know, because in certain places, they get rid of records after a certain period of time. She hired a lawyer but did not file a lawsuit, Morgan said, instead being paid $30,000 from Combs and saying that she signed an NDA. Ah, here's the thing, and that's a reminder for those that feel like when they sign an NDA. Signing an NDA does not prevent you from testifying or revealing to the police that of a illegal activity. We haven't spoken since, Morgan said. The last time I spoke to Sean was the night of the assault, and the last time I saw Cassie was when I signed the NDA. Wow. They took a lunch break. The judge told the attorneys that he hoped to adjourn for lunch at noon, now that court will adjourn at 3 p.m., every day. The judge is hard, steadfast on a schedule. I can appreciate that because that will help me gather my thoughts and schedule for you guys. So the court gets back in session. Morgan returns to the stand for cross-examination. The prosecution ended its direct questioning of the witness, Carrie Morgan, just moments after she returned to the stand this afternoon. Combs defense attorney Mark Aganafilla will cross-examine Cassie Ventura's former best friend. So Cassie Ventura was jealous of Kim Porter. And I can't recall if we mentioned it. There's so many days of coverage that we've been giving you guys. But I can't remember if we mentioned this in one of our last videos, because Cassie did talk about being jealous of the late Kim Porter. So NBC writes, they says Cassie Ventura was jealous of Kim Porter, Combs' ex-girlfriend and mother of his three children, according to Carrie Morgan. Defense lawyer Mark Aganafilla asked Morgan if Cassie was ever jealous of Porter, who died in 2018. "I'm sure," Morgan said. "Yes, she was jealous because she could never go to the New Year's Eve parties." Porter was the mother of Combs' children, Christian, and twin daughters, Jesse and Delilah. While Cassie Ventura may have been jealous of Kim Porter, her former friend says that Combs was also jealous of Cassie's time with actor Michael B. Jordan. Ventura told the court last week that she and Combs had broken up while she was in South Africa for a few weeks filming a movie, and that during that time that she expected that he suspected that she was having an affair with Jordan. Carrie Morgan said much of that time, much of the same under cross-examination today. "What I remember was that she was speaking to Michael B. Jordan and they hung out together," Morgan said, "and he was jealous of it." I also have to correct something that I said last week, because I remember that Michael B. Jordan and Lori Harvey dated, and there was this sort of relationship that was happening between Sean Diddy Combs and Lori Harvey at one particular point. I wanted to correct that. So Diddy apparently had this relationship, very brief relationship, with Lori Harvey in 2019. And then Lori Harvey and Michael B. Jordan started dating in 2020. So it was very close. So explains why I thought, oh, same time, same. Is that what was happening? But no. But then again, it's so incestuous, this industry. Carrie Morgan said that she hasn't spoken to Cassie Ventura in 7 years, after Ventura allegedly failed to take her friend's side after an alleged altercation with Combs. The witness recalled an incident when the three of them were at Ventura's apartment in 2018, when Morgan claims that Combs grabbed her by the neck and hit her with a wooden hanger. "The reason I stopped speaking to her was because she was not supportive of me after that incident, understandably. And a lot of friendships, for those that know friends that have been in domestic violence relationships, a lot of you probably can relate to this, to the situation. Maybe not necessarily being abused by your friend's abuser, but ending the friendships because of that abuser. So the reason I stopped speaking to her was because she was not supportive of me after that incident. I draw my line at the physical abuse," Morgan said under cross-examination. Even though Ventura eventually left Combs, married personal trainer Alex Fine, and is about to have their third child together, Morgan said the relationship remains broken. The witness says that she received $30,000 to keep quiet. She said that it was through him, the money wasn't coming from her. "She was the go-between," Morgan said. "I did not demand money from anyone. She offered money to close the case on it so I don't sue anybody or say anything public about it." And remember, Carrie Morgan had been around their relationship for the good majority of their relationship. And that was her best friend, so she knew a lot of details. And that could have ruined him back then. She says, "All I got was $30,000. Carrie Morgan's time on the witness stand ended after a quick redirect from the prosecution, who just asked her to reiterate what she saw during Combs' assault of Cassie in Jamaica. And this is just a prosecution to remind the jury. Even if the defense convinced you of something else, let me just remind you of this particular incident that stands out. They said the government then called David James, a personal assistant who worked for Sean Combs between 2007 and 2009, to the stand. James told the court that he was testifying because he was subpoenaed twice. So people are just saying, like, I did not want to be here. I've been subpoenaed, so I'm here. David James broke down in tears, describing the Bad Boy staff's undying loyalty to the music mogul, who viewed him as a king, the witness said. James recalled meeting with staffers during the interview process in 2007, and one female executive left a lasting memory. An overcome James grabbed tissues and testified that the executive pointed to a picture of Combs on the wall and said, "This is Mr. Combs's kingdom, and we are all here to serve in it."
Oof.
David James recalled the first time that he interacted with Cassie Ventura while he was Combs's personal assistant. "It was in Miami when Combs rented a yacht to try to impress her," James said. "When he and Ventura were smoking cigarettes, Ventura told him, 'This place is crazy.'" When James asked why she didn't leave if she thought it was so crazy, Ventura told him that she can't. "He controls my career, pays my allowance, and pays my rent," she said, according to James's testimony. James also testified that he heard that Combs talk about Ventura to a friend during a car trip in L.A., describing her both as his queen and also being very moldable. So he knew that he could control her. The other thing that I wanted to mention here, and this is coming from our friends over at The Shade Room, because you know what we do here, we cite our sources. So in regards to David James's testimony, he says the prosecution questioned James about his duties as Diddy's assistant, which including booking reservations, being present at the Bad Boy office, heading to the studio until 3 a.m. and travel. James testified that he and Diddy's security team worked 20 hours a day.
Eesh.
James testified that Diddy was in relationships with five women during the time he worked for him, naming the following women: Kim Porter, Sarah, Tara, Yana, and Cassie. This is going to, first of all, this is an employee very much involved in the escapades of this man's life. But it's also pointing out how involved the business and personal were intermingled. That's important for the prosecution. The prosecution asked about James's first conversation with Cassie, in which he asked why Cassie wouldn't leave Diddy. Cassie replied, again, "Trunk controls my life, my music. He pays for my apartment." James recalled in a conversation he overheard Diddy having while they were on Star Island. "Mr. Combs said that Kim is my queen out in L.A. with my family. He said that I have Cassie right where I want her. She's young and moldable."
Oof.
Are we surprised? No. But again, the prosecution's job, though, is to prove that there was S trafficking, that there was racketeering. Again, this is only day six. We shall see. I will probably have a better assessment midway through, because that is going to be important. Are the prosecution doing their job and proving this to the jury? It's not about proving this to the court of public opinion. It's proving to the jury. So we're going to continue to follow this, guys. This is day six, your recap here on the Kempire channel. Don't forget, you can also hear our recaps on the Kempire YouTube channel, but also on the podcast. So subscribe to the Kempire podcast today, and don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. As always, guys, if you're in the live chat or if you're in the comment section, I want to hear your thoughts and opinions on day six of the Diddy trial. Do you think that the prosecution is doing their job? Do you think that Diddy's attorneys are doing their job? How well are they doing their job? I have to say, I'm not necessarily completely sold on the prosecution side on how they're handling this. And I have to say, Diddy's defense team so far is putting a little doubt in whether or not Diddy did what he did to Cassie and other people, but whether or not the feds, the Southern District of New York, has a strong case. We shall see. We shall see. I did see that they talked about a plea deal, and we've talked about the plea deal. Apparently, Diddy was offered a plea deal, and he turned it down. Will there still be an option for a plea deal? Well, I've heard, I think this was on Law and Crime, where they said, the thing is here, if the prosecutors feel like their case is not as strong as things are going on, they may offer another plea deal. But again, Diddy wants to get off. And if they offer you a plea deal during the case, that says to the defense, you don't necessarily have the strongest case. So we might be able to get off on this. We shall see. This is really going to be interesting. I think especially because we're covering and talking about this on a daily basis, it's going to be interesting by the time we get to the end of this trial and what the jury decides. This is all going to depend on the jury. As always, guys, I am going to bring some legal minds here on the channel over the next couple of weeks so that we can pick their brains and their thoughts on how this trial has been going. So stay tuned for that. Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you like this video so that way our videos continuously show up. But make sure that you are subscribed and your notifications are on, because you never know, during this trial, we might even go live. And not might, we will go live, and we will be taking callers for people to share their thoughts on how this Diddy trial is going.
Carrie Morgan took the stand and talked about her relationship with Cassie Ventura. And it started off with Carrie explaining how they met, that they became best friends. They moved in together in Manhattan in 2004, talked about all of the things that they did together. And one of those things was go out. She said they went out, they went to dinners, they went to clubs. And it was a focus of the prosecution on direct examination to ask, did you both drink together? And so maybe this seemed a bit innocuous, but to me, I picked up the narrative prosecutors are laying down, which is prior to meeting Diddy, Cassie didn't really do any drugs. She didn't even really drink. This is what Carrie testified to. She said that anytime they would go out and have drinks, that Cassie would end up being sick. They didn't really drink that much together. The elements of sex trafficking is engaging in commercial sex through force, fraud, or coercion. So the key words here, and what the jury is going to need to decide, is was Cassie coerced into engaging in the freak-offs, or was she there on her own volition? What we heard today, both from Dawn Richard and from Carrie Morgan, is that violence was not something Cassie was a stranger to at the hands of Diddy. What you're going to hear on summation is prosecutors closing that loop and tying the violence that Cassie experienced to her engaging in the freak-offs, meaning she engaged in them because the alternative was for her to be beaten. And what we're hearing from these witnesses today is corroboration that this was a very violent relationship and that Cassie really didn't have a choice in the matter when it came to Sean Combs. And that's how prosecutors are going to close the loop. And they're going to use all these corroborating witnesses to show that Cassie was really under his thumb because of fear of violence. Cassie Ventura's testimony was really important for the prosecution, and she's actually the star witness, but she laid the foundation for what's to come. She identified individuals who are potentially going to be co-conspirators in the criminal enterprise. She explained who the cast of characters are, and she also talked about other things that are going to matter in this case when it comes to the charges: drugs, guns, kidnapping, arson, you name it, it came up during her testimony. But the witnesses that are to come this week are really critical to the prosecution's case when it comes to establishing the RICO conspiracy charge. That's crimes that are committed in furtherance of a criminal enterprise. Here you have a criminal enterprise of one, Diddy. So his co-conspirators, who presumably have deals with the government, are set to testify. Two of them are on the witness list this week. One is his former personal chef, and another is his former personal assistant. Listen for that testimony to really close the loop on the means and manner of the criminal enterprise, meaning explaining what it is and how it functions. This is really important for the prosecution to establish that element of the crime. Also, Cassie Ventura's mother is set to take the stand. She's on the witness list. That is going to be very emotional testimony. She's a corroboration witness, meaning we're going to learn what she knew and when about Cassie's relationship with Diddy. Many of the witnesses in this trial are still under seal. We're only learning week to week who's going to testify. Is it possible some of those big celebrity names may be called into the courtroom? It's possible, but it's unlikely. We already saw a whole host of individuals on the people and places list. These are people who may come up during the course of evidence or testimony, but aren't necessarily going to be called as witnesses. Witnesses here are not going to be people who saw them fight in a public place. The witnesses are going to be those who can speak to the intent, speak to the actual charges, like the criminal conspiracy or the sex trafficking charges, not just what they observed on a night in a restaurant.
And shout out to those of you that listened all the way through and that are subscribed to the podcast, that have rated us a 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify, because you see every once in a while, not more than once in a while, we add additional content, especially when we're covering this Diddy trial, because sometimes after I'm doing my summation of everything in regards to what played out in court on day by day, sometimes I learn something new after. Like today, I saw that they now have revealed pictures of the S workers, the male S workers that had these freak offs with Diddy. I'm not going to share those photos. I actually feel like that's a little cringy. I understand what they're doing is against the law. However, I also feel like you're now put their livelihoods, because some of them still might be. I did see that one of the people that are included, I believe his name was, oh my goodness, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's now in jail. He's in jail for killing his best friend. That's a whole other story. I digress. But if you know what I'm talking about, then you know what I'm talking about. But the photos of these men have been revealed, and I'm pretty sure that some of these men are probably still S workers. And now that this has been revealed and shared on blogs, it's going to put them in harm's way, but also their career as S workers are completely over. But anyway, I've digressed. But like I said, sometimes hours later, I'm getting more additional information and I'm adding it to the podcast. As like right now, I'm adding this information at the end. As always, I will be citing my sources so you can see the full video of Entertainment Tonight having a conversation with CBS News journalists and Access Hollywood. And I just felt like those videos were so important in regards to give us context. And as I said before, legal minds, journalists are all going to have a different thought and opinion and perception of what they've viewed in court on a day by day. And I'm going to continue to add that to the podcast, but also the YouTube video. But shout out to those of you that listen and watch both. We appreciate it, but I also feel like it's giving you the full story the best way that we can. So as always, thank you so much for listening. And of course, if you're not following us on YouTube and you found us randomly because of the Diddy trial here on the podcast, head on over to the Kempire YouTube channel and subscribe there so you can see my face and see all the other things that we're sharing on there. Anyway, thank you again for listening.
Thanks for tuning in to Kempire here on the Kempire Radio Network. Don't forget to give the Kempire 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. And as always, for more information on everything Kempire Radio Network, head on over to KempireRadio.com.